Welcome to Radio Sefarad's English Corner. I'm your host, Linda Jimenez, bringing news and other features of Jewish interest to Radio Sefarad's English-speaking audience in Spain and around the world. Sukkot, pronounced Sukkot by Ashkenazi Jews, is a biblical Jewish holiday celebrated on the 15th day of the month of Tishrei, between late September and late October. It's one of the three biblically mandated festivals on which ancient Hebrews were commanded to make a pilgrimage to the temple in Jerusalem, the other two being Passover and Shavuot. The holiday lasts 7 days in Israel and 8 in the diaspora. The first 2 days are Sabbath-like holidays when work is forbidden. The Hebrew word Sukkot is the plural of Sukkah, Sukkah for Ashkenazis, which means booth or tabernacle. This is a temporary hut constructed specifically for use during this festival. It has at least 3 sides with a roof made out of thatch or branches, providing some shade and protection from the sun, but also allowing the stars to be seen at night. It's often decorated with autumnal, harvest, or Judaic themes. The origins of Sukkot are found in an ancient autumn harvest festival. Much of the imagery and ritual of the holiday revolves around rejoicing and thanking God for the completed harvest. The sukkah represents the huts that farmers would live in during that last hectic period of harvest before the coming of the winter rains. As is the case with other festivals whose origins may not have been Jewish, the Bible reinterpreted the festival to give it a specific Jewish meaning. So, according to the book of Leviticus, the sukkah is intended as a reminiscence of the type of fragile temporary shelters the Israelites lived in during their 40 years of wandering in the desert after the exodus from slavery in Egypt. Throughout the holiday, meals are eaten inside the sukkah, and some people sleep there as well. On each day of the holiday, members of the household recite a blessing over the lulav, which is a closed frond of the date palm tree, bound with boughs and branches of the willow and myrtle trees, and etrog, or yellow citron. These are known as the 4 species. This week, I'm going to read you The Big Sukkah, a story by Abraham Raisin. He was born in Russia in 1876 and died in New York in 1953. Before settling in the United States in 1914, Raisin lived in several Russian and Polish cities, publishing countless poems and short stories in many Yiddish periodicals, and he was also the editor of several Jewish magazines. Raisin's writing has a deep human quality. His poems have a special lyrical beauty and directness, and many of them became popular as folk songs. His stories are simple, depicting everyday events, both sad and humorous, and show a wonderful understanding of the men, women, and children, Jew and Gentile, about whom he wrote. This story is taken from the anthology, A Treasury of Yiddish Stories, edited by Irving Howe and Eliezer Greenberg, and published by Schocken Books in 1973. Baruch's cottage was the smallest on the street. It was really more like a village hut than a town cottage. Only the roof with its rotting shingles showed that it belonged to the town, and the mezuzah on the doorpost that it was a Jewish home. The little cottage consisted of a single room. Baruch's older daughter, once called the rear half, which was separated from the front by an unpainted wooden cupboard, the dark chamber. But somehow she couldn't impress this name on the family. Twice she called it the dark chamber, but when the others remained indifferent, she began to doubt the propriety of her phrase, and went back to calling it, like everyone else, the dark corner. In such a crowded cottage, a cupboard is hardly a welcome guest. Tall, proud, wholly self-assured, it stood there in the middle of the single room, without regard to the discomfort it caused every member of the family. But the cupboard was an inheritance from Baruch's parents and had to be tolerated, though secretly everyone hoped it would somehow vanish. The oven was an even greater nuisance, a tyrant that occupied almost three-quarters of the cottage. The cupboard was its close neighbor, but it was plain that between them little love was lost. They kept staring at each other like old enemies. Only on the eve of Passover, when Tzivia, the mistress of the house, would whitewash the front of the oven, would it deign to look upon its neighbor with any friendliness. How such a huge oven had managed to squeeze into such a small cottage, no one knew. The cottage must have been 100 years old, but what its former proprietor could have had in mind was still a mystery. Anyway, its present owner hadn't bought the cottage himself. Right after Baruch's wedding, his father had settled him there, and there Baruch had remained for some 20 years, never troubling to learn the history of the cottage. There were more important things to do. Baruch was a man with a wife, a man with many children and little income. Naturally, one of the biggest troubles in his household is the overcrowding. His wife Tzivia is an able housekeeper, and their older daughter is an even better one. The two of them try hard to get some order and roominess in the cottage. But no matter how hard they work, they seem to accomplish very little. Take, for example, what happens after a meal. The mother and daughter have worked themselves to the bone, cleaning up and making a sort of passageway to the table. But in less than 10 minutes, something generally falls to the floor, something that has not been firmly set, or the bench is accidentally moved, and again, no one can make his way through the cottage. You have to leap if you want to get anywhere. For naturally, besides the cupboard and the oven, there are 2 beds, a table, and 2 long benches, the longer of which, with its sharp edges, has made dents in the wall. "Such a wonderful inheritance your father left us," jeers Tzivia at her husband when the crowding becomes unbearable, when she makes the beds or bakes challah. Baruch never answers her, for he himself is not too happy about his inheritance. But at times he says to himself, "Well, at least it's our own little place." Not only did the crowding cause physical hardship to Baruch and his family, it also caused spiritual hardship, and indeed, the spiritual was by far the greater. Baruch, to be sure, was a poor Jew, and yet, as was fitting for a man of his origins, he was a householder. Itcher Zlatis, for example, was a close relative of his, and Itcher was a wealthy man. Besides Itcher, Baruch had many other relatives. Nor did Tzivia have anything to be ashamed of. Her origins were also far from lowly. The 2 sides of the family had aunts, uncles, nephews, and nieces aplenty. And it was precisely because of these many relatives that Baruch, Tzivya, and their older daughter quarreled so often. It happens, and not seldom, that Tzivya gives birth to a son. And naturally, that's a time for celebrating, even if it's the third boy. In the cottage, it's quite crowded, but for the first week, the newborn baby lies near its mother and takes up little space. Even later, when it needs a crib, there's no problem. Tzivya has brought up all her children in hanging cribs, which take up room only in the air, forming a kind of second floor. But there's no room for the circumcision, not even for a quorum of men to hold the prayers. And, as has been mentioned, Baruch and Tzivya both have large families, all of whom must, of course, be invited. That's when the quarreling starts. The wealthier aunts and uncles, the shining lights of the family, are the first to arrive. And even they don't come in a group, but in pairs. Baruch apologizes to them for the lack of room, and he throws complaining looks at the walls as if to say, "Stretch, you oppressors, stretch!" Still more bitter is their humiliation during the holidays, when the relatives, as is the custom, invite one another to their homes. "Remember now," they all say to Baruch, slapping him on the back after prayer, "don't make me coax you to come with your whole family. Remember, do you hear me?" Baruch listens and wonders, what can he do? Not go and create ill feeling in the family? So, of course, he and his wife and their children make the rounds of the relatives. They have a sociable drink and a bite to eat, and then, when the time comes to invite them to his house, which is the polite thing to do, his tongue loses the power of speech and he can only mumble, "It would be nice to ask you to my house, but..." "Of course," they say, "when you have a bigger house, God will help." Baruch would like to say, "Why not now? After all, in a happy home, it's never too crowded." Could there be a cleverer answer? Yet it remains in his throat, never leaving his lips no matter how hard he tries. Forgetting to thank his relatives for their hospitality, Baruch slinks out, his family trailing behind him, and he's plagued by the feeling that he has gone not so much for the holiday as to be given a meal by a rich man who pities him, and his face burns with shame. In this way, he visits a second relative, a third, and a fourth. What else can one do? But to accept the hospitality of his relatives every holiday and never return it is simply unthinkable to Baruch. No matter how poor he is, that low he is not fallen. Passover, Shavuot, Hanukkah with pancakes, Purim with its delicacies, out of the question. The cottage is simply too small. But that's why there's another holiday, Sukkot. And on Sukkot, Baruch has the laugh on the whole world. His cottage, to be sure, is the smallest on the street, but the yard next to it is the largest. Nor is there a lack of vacant space. The trick is to build. And while Baruch hasn't the means to put up a big house, he can patch together a sukkah larger than any other. The rest of the year he may be cramped and miserable, but for these 8 days he wants to live like a prince of the land. An hour of good living is worthwhile, but 8 days? Think of it, 8 days of comfort when there's no need to be ashamed before one's relatives. Right after Yom Kippur, Baruch begins to build his palace. First, he sends his oldest boy to the garret, where there are 4 or 5 boards, also an inheritance from his father. Naturally, these boards wouldn't even cover a tooth, as they say, on an ordinary sukkah, least of all one so huge as Baruch plans. But one must remember that Baruch is a very thrifty planner. He does not build his sukkah in the middle of the yard, where he would have to put up 4 walls. He builds it against a wall of his cottage. And, since the sukkah must be bigger than the cottage, he attaches the few boards to his wall so that they touch his neighbor's fence, which is, fortunately, also made of boards. Thus Baruch has 2 walls almost ready-made, and now he has to build only another wall and a half. Then he takes down the 3 storm windows from the garret, the 2 doors of the cupboard, and borrows the rest of the necessary materials from his neighbors, who are already familiar with his plight, and lend him this and that as they have done before. Now the sukkah has 3.5 walls and an opening for a door. The door is made not from wood, but from quilts. Actually, 2 quilts, since a big sukkah must have a big door, and 1 quilt would of course not be enough. When the shell of the sukkah is finished, and there's no further need for man's work, the women go to it, that is, Tzivya and her older daughter. They sweep the ground, cover it with yellow sand, carry all the furniture from the cottage, that is, the table with the 2 benches and the 2 stools, to the sukkah. The cottage is empty and feels offended, and the 4 walls can almost be heard to murmur, "Hey, fancy people." But who has time to pay attention to the cottage when in the yard stands such a grand sukkah? Everybody laughs at the cottage and wants to forget that after Sukkot they'll have to return to it. Who indeed, when things go well, considers what will come later? The sukkah is now the dwelling of the family, while the cottage serves merely as a kitchen. "As a kitchen," says Tzivya bitingly. "It's really quite large." The cottage hears all this and almost bursts. The 4 walls think to themselves, "Wait, wait, we'll settle accounts with you." But who listens to them? Now the grand lady is the huge sukkah, and the relatives will come to her, not to the cottage. And, true enough, the second day of the holiday, Baruch invites the shining lights of the 2 families. "Will you see a sukkah?" he says to them with a proud smile. "A sukkah, a field, a prairie." "Yes, yes," say the various members of the family. "On Sukkot you are king." The family enjoys his lavish hospitality, which Tzivya has prepared with their last penny. And Baruch serves everyone, his face beaming. He just can't resist the temptation to say to at least one relative, "I'm inclined to think that my sukkah is bigger than yours." The "incline," of course, is used merely out of politeness. Baruch is positive that his sukkah is the biggest in town. And great is his joy when the wealthiest relative says to him, in a somewhat dejected manner, "My sukkah is a bit of a thing. There's hardly enough room to move around." This is the reply that Baruch remembers all year long, and it gives him the courage and the self-assurance to accept the hospitality of his relatives on the other holidays. It's not so terrible. On Sukkot, he repays them many times over. That's it for this week. As always, we'd love to hear from you. So please email us any comments or suggestions or questions you'd like us to answer on the air. Our address is English Corner at RadioSephirot.com. See you next week.